Welcome to the Agile Wire, where professional Scrum trainers Jeff Bubbles and Jeff Molesky discuss Agile topics. Now, here are your hosts, Jeff Bubbles and Jeff Molesky.
And we are recording. All right, Mr. Bubbles, kick us off, man.
All right, so this week we have Lisa Atkins on with us. Lisa barely needs an introduction. She's the author of the Coaching Agile Teams, created the Agile Coaching Institute. Right? Created it? Is that right?
Well, I co-created it. I'm a co-founder of it. Yeah.
Okay. And just a great coach, facilitator, and great person in the Agile community. So we're just so excited to have her on the podcast today. So Lisa, you had a question for us that you said you wanted to kick the podcast off. So I'll just kick it over to you.
Well, sometimes this happens, you know, in the pre-meet for a podcast or a meeting or an event that someone's doing. And it was just so awesome that you guys were like, let's just do it live. So this is great. So let's just do it. And then we'll talk a little bit about what it was that we did. Okay. So coming into this podcast, my desire, my intention is to serve your highest dream for what this podcast series does in the world. And so I'm just wanting to ask you to tap into that a little bit and tell me, like, what is your greatest hope or your highest dream for this podcast series?
I mean, you make these really big questions and they're hard to answer. So that's one thing I love about you.
Yeah. Well, that's what, so just like take the pressure off of that. Right. So, and just imagine that we're exploring rather than having to have the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to have a conversation that people can learn from, that new things maybe emerge from, that maybe we all three of us haven't thought of before, but together something new and exciting comes from it that helps somebody else out in the world. It could just be the three of us, or it could be somebody else out there. And I hope that we're able to do that by just, you know, make a positive influence in the world with this recording.
Awesome.
From my side, when we originally started, so we've been going a little over 2 years now. Jeff and I worked together at the same organization. We've since gone separate ways since then. So one is it forces him to stay in touch with me, which is good. And I'm only half tongue in cheek with that.
That's really sweet.
Person. If I didn't have something that forces me to stay in contact with people, like I just tend to go off on my own. Two, this is long-term brand recognition for myself. I really love what I do today, but if I ever want to switch directions, I want to have at least a little bit of name recognition for myself personally, so that it just bolsters the resume to a certain degree. And then right in line with that, people who probably listen to the podcast know that I am the listener. Like Bubbles is super outgoing. He asks a lot of really great questions. I'm more of the type that'll internalize things, be thinking about it, and I don't interject a whole bunch. And then lastly to that is I just love the opportunity to learn from people that are way smarter than me. And so selfishly, this is that opportunity to get something in. And I'm hoping that all of those things kind of combine, produce value for somebody else to be listening to. So that's kind of what I look to get out of the podcast.
Yeah.
Lisa, what do you want to get out of the podcast?
Well, I want to first make sure I'm hearing you and so that I can align with your greater intention for the podcast series, and then we can talk about this one podcast. Is that all right?
Yeah.
So what I'm picking up is, number one, the camaraderie between the two of you. This is the way you stay in touch. This is the way you get infused with new ideas. And it's the way you give back to the community, but also the way you support your own brand and your own thought leadership in the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like the hope is that in these conversations, we can have a generative conversation for us where we discover something new that is also useful to other people.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think you framed it up well.
Okay. Well, you framed it up well. So to those who are going to hear me cough, I apologize. It's pollen season in Richmond, Virginia. That's just the way it goes around here. So, okay. So let me just think about, can I align with that? I can totally align with that. I am especially aligned with feeling into the jumping into the camaraderie between the two of you, that feels really good. It feels like a good sort of nest to land into. And the other piece I can align with is really strongly, all of it, but really strongly is the generative conversation piece. That's what I'm into lately. And so now I can, does that sound okay to you guys?
Yeah.
So far. So now I can move into like what my greatest hope for this one podcast is that we're doing together. I think it is partially modeling a generative conversation, because I think what is happening right now, especially now that we're in the world of seeing each other in little boxes on the screen, is that our conversations have become very mechanical, stilted. It actually makes me really sad when I watch teams and groups interact online right now. So that's one piece of it. And the other piece is what we've just been doing. Like, I'm wanting to expose more people to this idea of designing an alliance and where they can use it. So there's a little bit of like content. I have a little bit of a content desire for this podcast. So that's about the way it happens, generative and content desire, designing alliance. But also, if I step back from that, I really appreciate, Jeff, you bringing in the idea of brand. I do podcasts for two reasons. Well, three. One is to give back to a community that gave so much to me. The second is because I don't like to say no to people. I mean, really, a podcast is so easy for me just to ruck up to and talk. And like, it's not a big deal to participate in a podcast. And so to the extent that it supports, you know, your high dreams, yeah, I'm just all about that. And the third is my own brand. You know, I'm not teaching agile coaching right now. I'm not out in the world, you know, sort of leading or being part of the leadership of an emerging profession. And so this is a way for me to provide some content leadership when I don't have that sort of mission that's driving me and having me be in people's mind. Yeah, so it's helpful for me that way too.
So one thing that, I mean, our listeners are going to just feel this right away is like you build such deep connections with people right away, mm-hmm. even in a remote setting here. How do you just do that all the time? Like I've listened to podcasts before with you on, or anytime I hear you speak, like it just, you just feel a connection. And I try to model that, but like, how teach us the special sauce there? Like what do you do?
Well, let's just talk about the formula, because we just went through a formula. I mean, come on, let's just be real about it. The you can consciously design relationships. And when you do, things go a lot better. And when you do, then it's easier to redesign them when things aren't going so well. So what we did as a formula is, you know, before we got on, just let all the listeners know, before we got on, these guys basically introduced themselves to me and said what their background was. And we got through the mechanics of the podcasting platform. And then we decided to do the rest live. So you really didn't miss very much, everyone. And when we got on live, what we did was ask a really important question. What's your greatest hope or your high dream for this thing we're about to do? And in this case, I wanted to align with the bigger mission of it first. But that doesn't always have to be the case. Let's mm-hmm. say you're coming into a meeting. It could be like, so what's our greatest hope for how this meeting goes? Right. Let's say you're walking into, you haven't had a really great relationship with the product owner. So you can have a conversation with the product owner that starts with something like, so, you know, I'm taking a stand that we need to have a reset of our relationship here. You know, how is that for you? Is that all right? And hear what they have to say. And then go, okay, so what's your greatest hope for how we can work together? So greatest hope. Now, what we didn't go to was worst fear mm-hmm. or biggest nightmare. But that's another valid place to go. It just didn't seem appropriate in this moment. And then from there, once people know other people's greatest hopes and possibly their worst nightmares, depending on what your situation is, then we can clearly design how we want to be together. So that we can accomplish a thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Because you're setting those guardrails up kind of right away. We're asking a deep question. We're going past, you know, formalities of things that are just very tactical.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, I didn't make this up. This comes from the Center for Right Relationship and from their Organization and Relationship Systems Coaching curriculum, which is happens to be the type of professional coaching I'm certified in because I love it that much. So, yeah, you don't have to make any of this stuff up. It just actually exists in the world. But just the notion of a designed alliance is a really important notion to me because I think people feel prisoner oftentimes to the relationships they have at work. Like they just don't think they're going to change and it's up to them to adjust around the other person. Not necessarily. I mean, especially if you're in a situation where you have been so severely compromised that you actually can't do the work you've been asked to do. And I see
where,
that.
Where do you think it comes from? That feeling that I have to change, not the other person, the environment, the structure, or anything like that.
I mean, well, let's just be real about power for a minute. So if the person that I'm interacting with has more power than me, our default position is to just mold around them. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we don't have the notion that we can create a durable relationship system and that and notice I didn't say harmonious or solid or, you know, super flexible. I said durable, a durable relationship system. And that thing can remain more steady as the ups and downs of the topics, the difficulties, the situations happen. I don't have a good metaphor for that. I need a good metaphor, everyone. So everyone who's listening, think about it. I've been thinking about the metaphor of noise. You know, like if you get an image of noise and you see all this up and down, but in the middle is like, it looks more steady and it looks more solid. But my husband's like, yeah, but that's actually where there's no noise. So that's not exactly your metaphor, Lisa. So we need a better metaphor, but something that's like, it's like a durable core in the middle of a bunch of ups and downs.
As you were talking about relationships there and you describing it, the image that came into my head was more like, something that's anti-fragile, like your immune system or your muscles. You exercise them, they get stronger and more durable, and then you can handle more resistance. And if you have our relationships like that, man, that's a magical thing, right? Because then we can handle any kinds of ups and downs that, you know, that we're faced with.
That's exactly right. And in fact, go ahead, Jeff.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I feel like not to jump to how you get to there, but I was just thinking about a recent kind of incident a recent trust building exercise that I went through with another director. And it was just like, we just needed to be a little bit more authentic with each other. Yeah. And I think that just felt really boiled down to, we needed to build trust with each other. We both knew we had positive intent, but man, we were pissing each other off something fierce. Mm-hmm. And we just had that honest, authentic conversation with it. And kudos to him, because he set it up. He said, we need to figure out how we either work together or don't work together moving forward. I was like, that's exactly what we needed. Awesome. And then since then, it's been awesome. So anyway, I just wanted to jump in because I really feel like that authenticity piece is so important inside of there.
Yeah, I want to pull out the specific things that he was doing either consciously or unconsciously, because this is not some sort of like magic mumbo jumbo that only some people can do. This is stuff is incredibly basic and formulaic when you learn it, right? And so what he did was, he made the first move, and this is not like a peer-to-peer conversation. It's definitely not like a coaching conversation. This is a conversation where someone has to make a move and make an assertion of, here's something I want. How will that go for you? Okay, now what do you want? It's a back and forth negotiation, essentially, mm-hmm. about how this relationship is going to go. And so he made that first move. The other thing he did was that you said we need to build trust. It's kind of interesting that people think we need to build trust. Actually, what we really, I think, need to do is to, as you said, become authentic so we can reveal the trust that's here. That's what he did. He was willing to step into vulnerable, what Patrick Lencioni calls vulnerability trust. And that's the basis for diffusing those five dysfunctions of a team that's in Patrick Lencioni's model, right? It's not really the kind of trust like, yeah, I trust you to do a certain thing, or I trust you not to hurt me. That is a certain kind of trust. And I think we think about that as the definition most of the time, but actually trust can be designed in if we become real with each other, if we're vulnerable, if we say, yeah, you know, this isn't going well, we're going to have to design whether we go forward together, and if so, how?
I know Jeff has said this before, so I'm going to steal it from him. Like he has said, trust is the result of living shared values together. And I don't know how to get your thoughts on that. Like if you live shared values with somebody, now you have built trust. It's an outcome. It's not a, it's not something you really desire. Like it's not the thing you're really after. It's like living those shared outcomes.
So, you know, here's the really important thing is that trust means something different to almost everyone. So when we're using words like this, part of what creates a durable relationship system is understanding each other's definitions, not necessarily agreeing on them. Mm. Right? Because if for Jeff, you know, if trust is a result of we share a value set and I can sort of relax into the sameness of that, right? Then that gives me, and I'm just totally making it up what it is for him, right? This might not be the way it goes for him. But if I can relax, and that gives me an ability to be more real more of the time. So therefore I have trust. For me, like how would I even define trust? I guess my definition of trust shifts a lot depending on what the relationship system is about and how I hold that term as well as other terms with the other person or people. Because trust is one of these really tricky things, folks. I mean, we have these ideas like we put trust on our working agreements and we understand what it means. No, we don't.
Jeff, I'm almost certain you know what I'm talking about here, but there's this TED talk by this wonderful woman, and she's talking about trust and how it's like we shouldn't be going to build trust. It's actually trustworthiness. I'll have to put it in the show notes because it's been a while since I reflected on it. But she gave an analogy like if you've got a friend who's just horrible at remembering details or coming up with a shopping list, well, you're not going to trust that person to go and do your shopping for you. But that doesn't mean they're not trustworthy. Like that same person is somebody you'd be more than happy to have watch your kids because they're really good at that sort of thing. So I think more to what I was hearing and what you were just saying, Lisa, is like even that word trust, like means something different to me versus what you might interpret it as. And so building that common understanding or language there or interpretation of the words is also helpful in building trustworthiness with each other.
Yeah. And you're bringing in another of the really important aspects when you have these designed aligned conversations, which is curiosity. Someone says, I want us to have trust. And really the next thing is, oh, cool. I think I want that too. What do you mean by trust?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Or how would we know if we had trust?
Yeah, that's a good one. And how do we know if I'm not trusting you in a certain context?
Exactly. So what you're doing in these conversations is you're figuring out, you know, where are the guardrails? Where are the places where it's a really easy overlap? Where are the places where we have to have a more explicit design? Like, for example, I might say to that person, you know, actually, I can't trust you with the details because I've been disappointed by you a number of times that way. And I just get that that's not your thing. And then I'd be looking over there to see what their reaction is, right? Because this is a two-way conversation. This isn't me dumping what I need on the other person. And so if the other person's still receptive, I might go, but here's the thing. I trust you with so many other things. I trust you with my kids, you know, but when it comes to the grocery list, you know what? That's something I need to give to someone else. And so how do you feel about that?
As you were giving that example, it kind of just triggered in my head. At least I made a mental connection. It was almost like writing a product backlog item and then filling it out with acceptance criteria or specification by example. Right. It was, yeah, we're going to talk about this thing, this high level that we're trying to achieve, but let's give some actual examples of how we would see that functionality play out in our product or something like that. And I just thought, wow, how great would it be if, because that's how I like as an ex-product owner, like I always think about things and from the product backlog perspective in the product, but just it's so helpful when you're actually giving examples of things like here's the expectation, here's some inputs, here's what the desired output is supposed to be. you can do the same thing with relationships, behaviors, and interactions that we can do with products and backlogs and functionality and features and all of that.
I love that. I love that idea. And, you know, as my husband says, whatever gets you up the hill, Jeff, if that model helps you, yeah, go for it. You know, I mean, we all have different ways that we construct these things in our mind. And that's what this conversation is about. It's like, you know, where can we find the places where we align, and where can we talk about how we're going to be together when we don't align, when there's actually a strong difference. So that's something to bring into the conversation before it even happens the first time. And the classic question here, which makes people's head spin, is how do we want to be when it's difficult? Because most people have never actually thought about this question before. And in fact, most people will be like deer in headlights if you ask it to them. And so it's useful. This is where in this design alliance conversation, the person with the more experience in designing alliances often leads. So it sounds like this. So how do you want it to be when it's difficult? And of course, you're going to get that deer in headlights, like, this is so weird. What is she asking? I don't even understand. Remember, you know, you can just imagine what's going on in the person's head. Like I said, yeah, that's kind of a weird question. So let me give you an idea. Let me think about it for a second. So in our particular relationship, so what I can already tell I'm going to need when it's difficult is I'm going to need you to not second guess yourself. And what I mean by that is the moment you have even the first inkling that something's not right, my request is that you really trust that. And you come to me and say, I don't know what's not right, but something doesn't feel right. And here's what I'm thinking so far. Or even just here's what I'm feeling. We'll figure it out together. So how would that go for you? Can you do that? Are you willing to meet that request? And the person will say yes or no, and we'll have a little conversation about it. And then as soon as that pump is primed, 9 times out of 10, the person goes, oh, yeah. So you know what I need when it's difficult is I need like really clear, straight talk. And I'd be like, cool, I can do that. No problem. And you could do this with a group too, but we're just using an example of two people because it's easier.
And then it helps when you do get to that situation, because it's like, I'm giving it to you straight right now, just like you asked. And then like you give it to them straight. Like, I'm not fluffing this up at all. Like, this is what you asked for.
Exactly. And what's so cool is over time, the more I have designed alliances with people, the more I realize what it is that I actually do need. So I now know to design into every relationship around the question of how do we want to be when there's a strong difference or a conflict. I know to design in how I need it. So I will say, so one of you asked me, so how do you want to be when it's difficult?
How do you want to be when it's...
I love that.
Jeff, you go. No, Wolaski, you go.
Lisa, how would you like it to be when it's difficult?
So Jeff, I've really learned over time that I can receive difficult feedback well, but not right out of the gate. What's hard for me when I start to hear difficult feedback is I fear disconnection and I fear that I don't belong anymore. So here's what I need. And you can say yes or no, or make a counteroffer to this because it may not work for you. But what I need is a little bit of a soft startup. I need you to say something like, so I've got something difficult to talk about. And then if it's authentic for you, I need you to say something like, and you still belong. And if that's not true, obviously don't say that. But if it is, just give me that, like my amygdala can relax moment, and then I can be open to hearing. So what do you think about that, Jeff?
Yeah. So even in that little instance, that, like, I felt a connection there. I felt you being just brutally, authentically honest and open with me.
Yeah.
And geez, oh, Pete, unless I'm just a complete jerk hole, like I you know, you can't help but reciprocate in that situation.
People do not wake up in the morning wanting to hurt other people. The vast majority, and most of them have been weeded out in, you know, we don't have too many psychopaths in the corporate world. Some people think differently, but I don't know. So, I mean, but most people I encounter, yeah, I mean, they want to honor each other. They want to have fun and have a creative and productive life together. You know, so yeah, most people are willing to meet each other's needs, but we don't talk about this stuff. And so what happens is we make assumptions. And so let's say that we haven't had this conversation. And Jeff, you just like barrel in with a bunch of feedback for me. You don't know the way I need it. I make up a story in my head of like, oh my God, I'm not good enough. Maybe I should start looking for another job, you know? And now I've made it up that there's a whole territory of topics that I can't come talk to you about, right? And so now imagine that all these walls get put up and now we can't even collaborate together after a while. That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing all of this misunderstanding and assumption build up between people to the point that they can't even really collaborate. And all they're really doing is having sort of functionary conversations now. And that really, it doesn't have to be that way.
Mm-hmm. And then when it comes out like a waterfall. It's just, blah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And then it comes out usually in a time when you don't want it. And so, you know, we've been talking about vulnerability, but vulnerability, like with the right guardrails and the right context, exactly what you just did there is like, we've only been really knowing each other and had a conversation for the last 30 minutes. And if you were to break into like this whole thing about your family and really tough time or something, like something just really traumatic, it's like, wow, we're recording a podcast. Now's not the time for that. Like just what you gave me is what I need to hear. And now we can work within those guardrails at this point. And we can get to that deeper thing later as we build a relationship, right? But like, I see like there's extremes. It's either none at all, or it's like everything all at once
I make it up is because people haven't processed their wounding. You know, I don't have the need to tell you the 10 stories that led to my very painful realization that this is the way I need feedback. That's immaterial. That's my work. I've done that work. I don't need you to know about that. Right. Mm-hmm. But I do need you to know the result of that and the little bit of wisdom I've gotten from it and how things go better if people can meet me in this specific way in the way I need to hear tough feedback.
So when people have these conversations, do you feel, or have you found that people still need that nudge to give that tough feedback? Is it still hard?
Yeah, because this conversation isn't only about what kind of feedback I want. That's just maybe one area. You know, I have to always design in cursing because I curse a lot. And, you know, some of my clients don't like that. That's okay. I can put a filter on if I need to, but I don't prefer to. And so I'd rather just come right out the gate and say, so here's the deal. My dad was in the Navy. It was always a lot of cursing in my household growing up. I curse a lot. I don't have to, but I'd like to. Is that all right with you? You know, I mean, so I guess it could be like from the sublime to the ridiculous, but the things that basically the question to ask yourself is, what would I need to do the job I've been asked to do to the best of my ability? And what do I need to be fully authentic here so I don't have to spend all the time managing the mask?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that second one was what keeps jumping out at me is just allowing us to be our authentic self at work or anywhere, right? In relationships, in our environments, whatever that happens to be. Because of the amount of, it's funny you bring it up. And normally before we get started with the podcast, we're like, hey, we don't care about language. You set the tone. But I am like a natural cusser. In fact, I like joking around with this. I used to be in the Army and I cuss a lot. And like,
I think that's all there is getting a bad rap here, Jeff, between me and you. Between
the Army. Yeah. But when I would do a typical briefing, I used to cuss so much, my soldiers would keep track of it. And they found out my average cuss rate was 3.6 cuss words per minute. All right. And that's a typical briefing where I would also have to show a video or something like that. So, where I wanted to go with that is it is an energy drain to not be able to be yourself. And if you're thinking about and I'm sure there's science to back this up, but like you start out with so much energy for the day and then you wear it all down and you got to go and you got to rest and replenish that energy source. If I was a business owner I'm employed by a business, I would bet that business would like to leverage and utilize the most of my energy in the most productive way possible. And so if we're thinking about it from an economic standpoint, a business perspective, Like, is it really worth me not saying shit quite as much as I would like to? Or I could be expending that energy producing value for the organization, value for a customer, or whatever that happens to be.
Yep, that's right. And I think it even goes much deeper than that. If we think about, I love that you brought in how much energy we have for managing, essentially managing decisions and filters. Because filter is always a decision. Like, am I going to say this or not? Is it okay to do this or not? You know, will they let me or not? Well, yeah, God, that's, yeah, I'm already exhausted just thinking about that, right? So I wish I could find the source of this, but I learned this a long time ago from someone who was into Chinese medicine. And she told me that there is so much, so much decision-making energy we have in a day. And there is an amount of that, like when it goes down, then we can replenish it. But if we've had used so much decision-making energy that we're actually into our reserves, that's an amount of life force that never gets replenished.
Sorry, Jeff, I wasn't sure if you were going to jump in with something, but I think it was Thinking Fast and Slow. I think they talked about this a little bit inside of there. Like, they had the study where they had somebody walk down a hall and there were some treats at the end, and they were measuring how often that person would actually stop and take one of the treats, and how over the course of the day, your willpower actually breaks down because you're forcefully not taking that decision. And that goes right back to that energy. But I hadn't heard the second part, which sucks if it's true. I don't want to steal something that I'm never going to get back from myself.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think we are at the dangerous cusp of that being true for a lot of people right now. I think about how exhausted people are.
Just because of the Zoom work environment that we're in, or
the pandemic, the fact that we're in pervasive, perpetual exponential change that the human body is not designed for, you know, like all of these things. The fact that business is still pretending like it can be separate, that its decisions don't matter. How ridiculous is that? You know, like, we all know the jig is up. We all know that every business decision has an interconnected impact. You know, and for us to keep pretending as if we don't have interconnected impact, especially unintended consequences of a kind of impact, and that we don't do anything about those. I mean, I think that steals our life force.
I know. I think about that stuff too. And then I think, but people are pretty resilient. They are anti-fragile.
That's been my saving grace motto this last year. When I get like so depressed, I mean, oh my gosh, so much like dip into the, like, oh, sorrow, grief, depression, loss, you know, all that. Then my motto is people are resilient.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been, my kids are just going back to school, and it's been tough, like the whole virtual world for them. Mm-hmm. And I think about, you know, it's only accelerating kids. You see it even more, I think, than you do in adults, because, you know, they'll show the raw emotions, especially to their parents, you know, a little bit more. And I guess I just thinking about, but they've adjusted. Like, it was really, really tough the first maybe month. And then after that, like, they found really good outlets, and we found different ways to, like, build connections, and not just through a superficial way, but like deeper connections with people. And there's been some great things that have come from it that wouldn't have happened if we were back the way we were before. We would have been too busy to stop and smell the roses and spend some of the time we've done and created some of the experiences we've created. Yeah. So there are good things that come from this. I guess I just, it's how do we balance those good things with the sacrifices we do have to make, and then mm-hmm. keep the good things that we have right now in our working environments. Like, I think most people are loving the freedom. Like, let's be real. Like, there's so much freedom in your day.
Yep, absolutely. You know, I want to presence both sides of this. The tremendous opportunity that the pandemic has given folks like us who can work online, and who have money in the stock market. We've not been hurting. And then the incredible sorrow and loss and grief of people's livelihoods and being locked in with their domestic abusers, and let's also presence the 572,000 Americans who've died at this mm-hmm. point, and many more, of course, globally. So like all of that is here. And this is the work of our time, which is to create innovation from chaos. To look at all of this and go like, yeah, you know, the day of just blindly putting on this perspective and staying in that perspective and ignoring everything else, like that's over. That I think that was over the first time we saw the power of the internet, because we immediately got connected. And there's a beautiful poem called Pandemic and by Lynn Unger, and she says, we are connected in ways that are beautiful and terrifying. Both. Our interconnectivity creates the possibility for this innovation that's a more of a synthesis out of chaos rather than just a narrow, me-focused capitulation to complexity.
So going back to something we were talking about earlier, Jeff, you were saying, you know, and I love you for it because I love this as well, just anti-fragility. We have a, where do I want to go with this thought? 10 years ago, actually probably more like 15 years ago. No, actually, I think it was 20 years ago. We had probably the first shocking moment that I remember, which was the Columbine shooting. And those types of mass shootings have just become fairly standard in our culture, at least here in the States. And so I'm curious if that is what a built-in human coping mechanism to become anti-fragile, where those shocking, out of the normal type situations, we can just learn to deal with and continue moving on with. And so where I'm going with this thought is that was, it sucked a lot. It still sucks today, but you know, literally just the other day, another shooting happened, and I'm able to just say, okay, well, that's kind of life. Let's go on with things. In 5, 10, 15 years from today, when pandemic number 17 comes rolling through, and we just say, yep, that's life. Is that, you know, I guess let me close that off. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a big old can of worms. Is my thought on it.
And if we don't want to go this direction, we don't have to.
I actually love this direction because I think agilists in particular have a really important a calling. And this is one of the things I'm doing these lately is just like saying, okay, do who we are, what we know how to do, how we know how to make forward progress, even in the midst of, you know, mind-numbing complexity. Like, might we be needed for these bigger topics? I mean, I think it could be so. I think, and if I think, oh my gosh, we have millions of agilists already all over the world. You know, it's not like we have to build that network. We just have to activate it. Mm-hmm. It's there. Right. And so I do think about these things a lot, Jeff. My two top Clifton strengths, the first one is connectedness and the second one is visionary. Mm-hmm. So I end up thinking about the future a lot. I'm pretty sure that we need a leap in consciousness if we're going to avoid destroying ourselves or avoid going back to like intense tribalism. And which would require a significant shrinking of the population to work, right? So I think we are gonna, you know, you can pick anything. You can pick climate disasters. You know, you guys might know about the Thwaites Glacier. It's still barely holding on, but if it goes, you know, the sea level on every shore will rise within a few months. I mean, drastically. So any of these things could happen. It could be pandemic number 17. It could be a climate disaster, multiple climate disasters simultaneously. I mean, you know, I guess our place in this planet has always been more temporary than we'd like to believe. And I think that's what the pandemic has shown us, is that the things that we thought were stable were not as stable. And that's actually the nature of life. More so than this stability that we have really, at least here in the United States and in much of the Western world, have really appreciated for the last couple of generations. Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful writer, Margaret Wheatley, who for a long time was known by most people as, you know, one of the people who really understood how we could have societies change for the better. And her work in recent years has been basically stop hoping
and start doing, or what?
No, stop hoping that it's going to get better. So her point of view is that we are actually in collapse now. And what we can do is for one of her recent books is called Who Do We Want to Be? But basically the main question, I've been reading it so slowly because it's intense. It's like a tiny little book, beautiful graphics and everything, like super glossy, but very intense. Who do we choose to be is what it's called. And the question is, you know, let's just presume that we are in collapse. Let's just presume things are going to get worse and worse. Let's just presume that Australia is going to be on fire every year, for example. Let's just presume. So in the midst of that, who do you want to be as a leader? And when I get down to the bottom of that question, I realize that who I want to be as a leader doesn't change. It's not related to that circumstance. Because what I want to do is help people work with what is instead of ignoring it or trying to force it. And if I can help people work with what is, then I think there is the moment that there could be maybe an innovation or an inspiration that comes up and creates what Margaret Wheatley calls an island of sanity.
Yeah. So go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to reframe it to something we probably have heard all the time in our Agile school of thought, is without transparency, there can be no inspection and adaptation. And so if we can't make that visible, if we can't make that connection, like you're talking about, Lisa, then can we even hope to adapt and find a better way out of it? So yeah. I love that, making that hidden visible. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Jeff?
So I kept smiling a whole bunch when you were talking earlier, not just because I'm enjoying what you're saying, but I hear, and I don't know if you're familiar with them, so much of Bob Galen come out when you're talking
about
them.
That's awesome. You know, Bob and I we've been friends for a long time. But we don't know about each other's work. We've actually never worked together or really had more than a friendly chit chat, but I just love who he is. So that's my connection with Bob.
Yeah, I enjoy their podcast. So Josh and Bob, what is it called?
Josh Anderson and Bob Galen, the Metacast.
The Metacast, that's it. Yeah, it's in my feed. I just couldn't remember what.
Thank you. I didn't even know about it. That's awesome.
But there was just, and Josh is great too. I don't want to diminish him, but whenever Bob is talking, he puts on the coaching hat so often, and that's what I was hearing from you was, and where I want to go with this thought and kind of the question, which was, you know, we spent probably the first 30 minutes of this podcast really just talking about relationships and people and how do you build that up with one another. We took a little bit of a slight detour here, but then you even came back to just, again, building that island of sanity, I think is how you phrased it, and thinking about yourself as a leader and who do you want to be, regardless of the environment that's going on, or I shouldn't say regardless, but just who do you want to be in any type of situation, or how does that situation impact you? So where am I going with the observations that I was just talking about? But Lisa, you're an Agile coach. I just need you to help us deliver more software or deliver more product, right? When a customer is reaching out to you. They say, hey, I really liked your book. We've got some dysfunction going on here with some teams, or we need the agile. Could you come and deliver us some of that agile stuff? Like, what is your approach to starting to work with customers in that context?
Well, it's very similar to how we started this conversation. Not so much like, I do ask them the question, like, what is your greatest hope from having me come in? You know, and the thing I'm listening for all the time is what is my holistic sense, using all of my senses, of what is trying to happen here with this client? What's trying to happen in their environment such that they would be wanting to talk to me? And if I can get a sense of that, and I can ask them some questions, but I can also just sense it from the way that they talk. Then I can ask myself, can I align with it? Can I align with it? Now, this is a place of rank and privilege that I have, because as you say, Jeff, people are like, oh, I read your book, you know, come and help us. So I'm at the point of being the choice maker, right? And it's a little bit different for someone who is working a job that is not their vocation and not their calling, right? Because for me, it's all one thing. And I hope that more people will have it be all one thing. I think that's actually one of the things we need to move to evolve the human species. But for them, the questions are still valid. What's trying to happen here? And can I align with it? And if you can't align with it, then at least you know. And now you can make choices about, well, then do I want to do some volunteer work, where I can more fully align with what I'm here to do, who I am as a leader, what I'm trying to bring to the world. Most people are in a constant, mostly unconscious process of discovering that. So I think that's one of the things that we can do as agilists, is help people contact who they're meant to be as a leader. And a leader is simply anyone who's willing to take responsibility for their world, right? So it's pretty much everyone. Right. So this is a really beautiful terrain we're in, and I know it, and I know we're in a generative conversation when I lose my train of thought. So that's awesome.
So much good stuff there. You just make me reflect all the time on like all these things. I'm like, these are some big questions and I need to spend some more time thinking. One thing I'm really looking forward to is going back, just thinking meta level, is going back and listening to this and then stopping, hitting pause and losing myself in thought. Because I tend to do that here, Lisa, as I'm listening to you talk about different things. But one question I did have that came out of something you were just saying there is like, why do you think that it is so hard for people to find that vocation, that's their passion, that's the thing that they exist for? And why is it most people just have a job that they go to and they put time in? Like, what's the divide there, and how do you get people to take that leap that you talked about?
Well, I mean, let's just understand that not everyone has to. I mean, yeah. I think that's an important piece right here. People who are pursuing sort of like a fulfilling life and a self-actualized life like we are, we tend to think that everyone needs this. Maybe not. Maybe not. I mean, maybe it does fit with some people to come in, do their job, pump out the product, and then there's something else that is fulfilling. So I just want to like hold up the flag of like, let's be really careful about how much social engineering we're trying to do with people. But for people who, and I think this is perhaps the majority of them, people who are unfulfilled, people who feel like they are a victim to circumstance. Well, that's a ripe field for seeing, you know, like what is the thing that wants to grow? Mm-hmm. I think more people need coaches, honestly, and not coaches that are trying to teach them how to do something, but coaches that are helping them explore their inner landscape. Mm-hmm. Because that's where their motivation lies. And that's where the answers to all of, you know, overcoming all the obstacles live. It's not in actually solving the problems that are the obstacles. It's in creating the vision of what will pull them forward. Mm-hmm. You know, and really holding people as magnificent as they really are. I think that's a huge part of what we can do for people. And I think Agilists as change agents, like one of our like really shining moments here is that we don't collude with people's limited beliefs of who they think they are.
Mm-hmm. We open them up to the options that are out there and maybe even give them the nudges that they think are to things that they're not even aware are possible. You know,
That's right.
I think we all need that. Like I need that. I have a lot of the great coaches I work with every day. We give that to each other, you know, like everybody needs it. So for listeners out there, if you don't have that coach, that person in your life, like find somebody that can be that person for you.
For sure. At any given moment, I have a coach or a mentor in my life right now. And I have a mentor right now, who has just really made it clear. Like I woke up in the middle of the night a couple nights ago, just so clear that right now what my stake is in the world related to my leadership is simply this almost ridiculously simplistic statement, which is conscious leaders make healthy choices. Hmm. That's it. That's what I'm about. I'm about healthy choices and I'm about conscious leaders. And so as I'm listening to a client who's saying, or prospective client who's saying, hey, yeah, come in and do blah, 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 and do blah, 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 whatever they say, I'm constantly like, okay, is there a way for me to potentially activate my stake, my leadership stake? Because if I have that powerful alignment, then I think I can do some good here. And if it's just coming in and doing some thing, nah.
Mm-hmm. What are healthy choices, or what do you think when you think of healthy choices, what's that context?
So what I'm hoping for and what I am believing that more consciousness, more awareness, but also more expansion of consciousness will bring to us are leaders who make choices that benefit the greatest good possible. So that's what a healthy choice is to me. Something that benefits it's not perfect. It's still going to have unintended consequences, still going to have a downside, but it's not harmful, and it can benefit the most possible. That's healthy to me. Okay. And I would be really curious to explore with these leaders, and I am exploring, like, what's healthy to them? You know, like, for most leaders, it starts really close in, because most leaders are making choices that's even against their own health, their own personal health. Mm-hmm. Right. And so for them to come into greater alignment with their own integrity and to recapture their authentic, their courageous authenticity, like Jeff was talking about earlier with that person who came and was quite vulnerable and said, hey, we need to redesign this relationship. Like, so that's the work with most leaders I'm working with right now, is that they're just so tossed about by circumstance and they're tossed about by the exhaustion of pervasive, perpetual, exponential change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they make a bunch of decisions that they know are not healthy. Even for them.
Short-term gain for long-term loss type changes, or maybe even sometimes I think they're making choices of, this is just the expectation, so I'm making the choice to follow the expectation.
That's right. Right. Or they feel like they don't really have a choice and they make a quote unquote decision. I'm just going to decide to sort of force this thing. And they already feel victimized by it.
Yeah. That happens a lot in middle management within inside of organizations where, you know, they're just told this is what you need to do. They don't have a say and they just have to be the one to... You know,
right, which is why we become full circle back to designed alliances, because if those middle managers had really durable alliances with their manager, with the teams they're interacting with, then we could be more real. You know, then when the manager says, you know, I really don't care, like this Agile thing, yeah, whatever, but it doesn't matter how you get it done, just get it done by this date. Mm-hmm. That would be the moment for that manager to say, hang on, we've actually talked about this, right? We've talked about how we want to be when the delivery pressure bumps up against the need for us to have operational stability and innovation. Mm-hmm. So this is the moment we're in right now. So let's just slow this down because that's what we agreed to do. Slowing things down is like a really big agreement for me in a design alliance.
And when you slow it down, does that mean we stop, we look, that, take that, a higher level view, and we discuss like what we want to do in this situation? Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, and what it means is just not running headlong into the non-decision, the thing that just sort of runs us over. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, hang on, take a pause here. We are actually at the juncture that we were afraid to be at. So let's just look at this juncture. That's the slowing down I'm talking about. And Jeff, yes, taking a meta view on that could be one of the ways that we get past sort of the oppositional forces.
Yeah, as you were describing it, I would imagine those are just natural points of friction or tension or conflict that we've just trained ourselves to avoid at all costs, right? And thus we then just allow ourselves to be bulldozed or whatever into these bad situations that just looping back to how you were talking about earlier about the feedback model that you need, right? And how if you're not getting it, it stays cooped up inside until it just blows up. And that's the same thing we're doing with these points of conflict that we're choosing not to engage with. We don't enter that danger and we choose to avoid it until it just becomes too big, and then it just blows up in us, on us in a very negative fashion.
Right. And I think it would be better if it actually blew up. I think what it does is it goes underground.
Mm-hmm. And when it goes underground, a lot of times you lose options, right? Because time goes by, it's not transparent, and then it pops back up, and now we don't have many options. Yeah. Like,
and eventually you lose life force. I mean, if you stuff enough things underground, eventually you're going to be like in that Pink Floyd song, Comfortably Numb, man. You know? I mean, how many people are we encountering in work right now who are comfortably numb?
Enough, for sure. Too many.
Yeah. And I say that, like, I don't think it's actually comfortable for anyone, but it is familiar. Mm-hmm. And we tend to stay in what's familiar.
So Lisa, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. At this time, is there anything you'd like to plug or promote to our listeners?
I just think if people want to know about what I'm up to, you can go to lisaadkins.com, but you have to know how to spell my name. It's LYSSAADKINS. Great for search engine optimization, not great for regular conversation.
And we'll definitely have that information in the show notes as well. So again, thanks you so much for coming on. It's always humbling to have such rock stars come on and share the conversation and their wisdom with us and our listeners. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The Agile Wire. We are consistently inspecting and adapting ourselves. We would appreciate feedback at feedback@theagilewire.com or on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play Store. See you next time.